This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Be in office, and had not the Justice Department invalidated the redistricting under the Voting Rights Act of Republicans who tried to eliminate minority voters from her district, who overwhelmingly voted for her.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, look, they have been out to get Wendy Davis. The Republican Party has been, and you can see why. She is the most effective leader for women, for folks all over the state. I imagine they'll try again, but boy, I feel like the fuse was lit the other night in Texas. And folks aren't going back.
Are we going to see another woman governor in Texas?
Look, a lot of folks would say it's about time, and nothing would please mom more.
Well, we will, of course, continue to follow this issue in Texas, the people's filibuster. Cecile Richards is president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Happy birthday to John Randolph. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fels, Aramonte, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Gesdering, Amy Littlefield, Martinez DeRosta, Nima Allen, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, Christian Goff, Esther Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is Dante James, Bureau Director at the City of Portland's Office of Equity and Human Rights.
Do you have talents in fundraising, development, or new media? Are you an active KBOO member? Then here's your chance to bring your know-how to the KBOO Foundation Board of Directors. Applications are now being accepted for the 2013 election until midnight, June 28th. To apply, go to the kboo.fm homepage and click on KBOO Board of Directors Application.
Singled out by NSA surveillance, targeted by an FBI sting, in 2007, Yassim Arif was convicted of one charge of money laundering for witnessing a loan. Now, documents released through the Freedom of Information Act reveal the FBI got it wrong from the start. It was a case of mistaken identity, and the feds knew it before the case went to trial. Join me, Linda Olson-Osterlund, and my guest, attorney Stephen Downs, on a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. It's a case of mistaken identity, right here on KBOO.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is my pleasure to have Dante J. James, Bureau Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, here in the studio with me. Welcome, Dante.
Good morning, Joanne. Thank you so much for having me.
It is such a pleasure to have you here. I'm going to take a moment to read briefly your bio,
Very briefly.
I'm just going to take a couple of pieces out of it,
right?
Because I think that you're one of our best kept secrets in this town. So we're gonna let the secret out of the box today. So Dante J. James has over 25 years of political, nonprofit, and legal work in the areas of social justice, civil rights, and government contracting. The father of two, resided in Denver, Colorado for the last 28 years before coming to Portland to head the Office of Equity and Human Rights. A graduate of University of Denver College of Law, he has been an attorney in private practice, a public defender, and an administrative hearings officer. He was on the advanced staff of the Clinton administration during the 80s and traveled nationally and internationally. He was appointed by Denver Mayor Wellington Webb as executive director of Denver's Affirmative Action Office, overseeing its Minority Women Business Enterprise Program. He also was responsible for the Federal Disadvantaged Enterprise Program at Denver International Airport. He hopes to continue the work of improving the educational, economic, and workforce opportunities for those who have been historically underrepresented and to create equal opportunities for all Portlanders. That's very cool. And so I wanted to do that because I wanted to make sure that people had a little bit of your background, right?
Okay.
As most people may know, just over a year ago, in 2011, in fact, the city council passed an ordinance that created the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and Dante is its first director. And so, Dante, what is the Office of Equity and Human Rights?
The big question.
The big question.
I guess I can give you the short answer and then follow up. It's essentially designed to change, in some sense, the way the city does business and ensure that it provides all of its services, internally and externally, with equity, through an equity lens, so that everyone has the opportunities for their best advancement in and the best receipt of how the city does what it does.
And so you've been doing this for a little over a year?
I got here, I started March 15th of last year.
So how is the city of Portland doing as it relates to equity and human rights?
Doing better.
Better.
Doing better. As in anything, there's always work to do.
Yes.
But I think I can honestly say that the city is serious about doing better, and obviously better is a judgment call. So in terms of better meaning improving how its consciousness is and how it delivers its services, who it delivers its services to, who it hires, fires, retains, who it contracts with. So I think that in terms of better being judgment, it's doing so with more of a consciousness of who are the residents of this city and who were receiving the services the city provides.
And so I suspect that you've just been received with open arms, right? People are like, oh yeah, Dante's here.
I'm gonna let you go with that.
And I will say, before we knew who would fill the role, there was lots of debate in the city of Portland about why do we even need an Office of Equity and Human Rights. There was certainly debates at the city council. But prior to even the conversation starting about creating this office, there were community efforts led by Coalition of Communities of Color released a report. The Urban League of Portland released a report, the State of Black Oregon. And so those reports were then brought to the city council with the mandate, you got to do something,
right?
So I don't want anybody listening to think that the city just miraculously decided that we're not as equitable as we should be, right? And so with pressure from the community, this office was created. And I think with high expectations from the community, like, okay, now we've got this office, things are going to happen, right? And so...
Yeah, rightly so. I mean, I think you are very correct that the city put this office together, certainly... As my understanding, having watched some of the city council meetings before I arrived and read those reports that you mentioned, it was very clear that communities of color in this city are not only falling behind the majority population, but they're actually, I mean, some of in social indicators, if you will, education, health, employment, et cetera, are going in reverse. And so that was, I think, the major impetus for the city recognizing that something different needed to happen. You know, the saying, if you keep doing the same thing over and over expecting a different result, then that's not going to work. So
that's it.
Something different needed to happen.
Wonderful. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join Dante, James, and I in the conversation about the Office of Equity and Human Rights. We're going to go to the phone line. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Good morning.
For many years, I've been making complaints, telephone calls, letters about a covert and overt harassment to me in my public housing, and nothing's been done. But here's what I know about this country. All kinds of abuse has been going on for generations that really haven't been worked on or dealt with. And here's another thing I know. The energy that's taken over this country and Portland, Oregon, I will never get justice for this.
Well, Joanne does call regularly, and she does have some issues with her public housing. Is that something that the Office of Equity, what would you do if Joanne called your office with her concerns?
Well, I would, first let me say that the Office of Equity and Human Rights is not a civil rights office. I think there's a misperception by many that it is and that it can deal with things on a much broader scale than we actually do. So it's not a civil rights office. So in terms of public housing, public accommodations, things of that nature, I would, I mean, I can refer folks to where to go, be it to, you know, Fair Housing Council or other areas in that regard. So as much as, you know, I've spent a good deal of my life doing community activism and other kinds of things. And so in some sense, it's a little frustrating for me because we don't do some of the things that I get calls about. But at the very best, we can refer them and try to ensure that they are directed to the right place to address their concerns.
And so you primarily primarily provide support to the bureaus within the city of Portland, right?
Yes, essentially. The idea is to work internally more than externally. The idea being if we improve how the city does what it does, then the communities in the city will benefit. And I have to believe that. And so if I can improve the interaction and the relationship that the bureaus have with communities, then the communities benefit. So it's not purely just at the exclusion of the communities by any means. It's how do we increase the relationship with the bureaus in the city and so that there is an engagement and a feeling of honest engagement and ability to influence from the communities to the city. And so, you know, one of the programs that we have is it's called the New Portlanders Program, which is specifically about refugee and immigrant populations in this city. Almost one in five in this city are foreign-born. And so it's a very large population. So trying to create the relationship and engagement and access to services for that specific population is something we focus on as well.
And so I know that you've been developing training programs for particular bureaus, and the goals of the training programs is to
essentially raise describe, define, and explain what equity is, because so many folks don't know what it is, and it's hard to ask somebody to do what they don't know. It's not diversity. It's not affirmative action. It's broader than that, if you will. Those are aspects of the idea of equity. And so the training that we provide is anywhere from 90 minutes to we've done four-hour trainings for bureaus and bureau leadership. One of the difficulties of this city and the city structure, as you're well aware, in the commission form of government, is that I can't mandate across portfolios of city council. And so I can't say, okay, everybody in the city needs to receive 8 hours of training on equity so we can do better. I can't do that. And so at this present time, I'm we, by invitation, or certainly as I try to suggest, have done training for almost 600 folks in the city. 10 bureaus, we've done training for over 10 bureaus. One of the things that I'm very proud about is, for me, I'm trying to institutionalize this work. And so as part of requirements for mandatory training that all supervisors and managers have to go through, from human resources in the city, equity training is now a part of their mandatory training. So all managers and supervisors who go through this training will receive equity training. So it's just an explanation of what it is and how it is. And then specifically we provide scenarios specific to the bureaus that they can then practice doing equity work, if you will, with a scenario of I don't know, how to do better outreach or how to do better either community outreach or employment outreach or, you know, if you're looking at putting a new policy together, what is it that you should look for from an equity perspective? And here's a scenario now in small group. Discuss this and see what you can come up with.
If you've just joined us, I am talking with Dante James. He is the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So let's flip to the other hat that you wear, which is human rights. as the Office of Equity and Human Rights, the Human Rights Commission is under your purview. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct.
And what is the role of the Human Rights Commission?
Essentially, as its title implies, to protect human rights for residents of the city of Portland. And it follows the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights to do that. And, you know, I've tried to, I mean, before I got here, the precursor to this office was the Office of Human Relations. Mm-hmm. And it essentially was the staff for the Human Rights Commission. Mm-hmm. And so so the structure has certainly kind of changed, that now the office is, the commission is under my office.
Uh-huh.
So I've attempted to try to allow the commission to really do the work on its own.
Right.
And support it as best that we can, either financially or otherwise. And so I think that the commission is now out really trying to create its own strategic plan, which it has done, gone through a strategic planning process, and just last night had a community engagement process. Mm-hmm. And so allowing that commission to really get a sense of what the city needs and what the communities are wanting, mm-hmm. so that it can inform its work.
Wonderful. We've got several callers on the line, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Marie. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, good morning. Now, I do have my radio on. Is it feeding through? It's okay?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we can hear you fine. But you should turn your radio off. I think you get feedback that way.
Okay. I could go pull the cord or just go for it. Just keep talking if you guys are okay.
Keep talking.
Okay. Well, this is a wonderful program. I'm so grateful for this program. And I had a question and a comment. And my quick background to let you know, I'm actually calling from Hood River, so you guys are reaching out, clear out to us. And my background is Hispanic ministry, so I'm all for equity for all minorities. And I have a certificate as a deaconess in Hispanic ministry, so I'm bilingual, so I'm really tuned into the immigration needs. So I'm grateful for this program. And then my question, your program that you're explaining today, and my question and comment is, can I go to the training? And I guess I can look online and read about how to join the training, right?
Yes and no. The trainings that we provide currently are for the bureaus themselves, either bureau leadership or bureau staff. We have done some external training for some of nonprofits that do work with homeless communities as it relates to the housing bureau. And so we've done some external training, but for the most part, the majority of our training is internal at this point.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. And in terms of houses, I have been to one homelessness training conference, a three-day conference. Okay, so maybe later on you all can reach out to a little bit lower-level people. But my comment is, and I don't know if you all may know this very clearly, but this might be useful with your training. It's a wonderful video. It's called Crossing Arizona. It's actually made by Notre Dame, and it's a department where they work with people that are the immigrants. And that, I think many, many, many Anglo people, many white people really don't know the suffering of Hispanic. And the video Crossing Arizona shows, it actually does show at the end of the video a real person who died, and they're wearing jeans and a t-shirt laying on the Arizona sand. And so people, I think many people really need education. So I'm grateful for your program because you're educating us. Yeah. I hope my idea wasn't too far afield.
No,
not at all. Thank you for your call.
Appreciate you
listening.
And I'll just give you just a quick piece of a little background I had. When I was in law school, actually, I did an internship at a refugee camp on the border in southern Texas. It was the only refugee camp essentially allowed legally in this country, working with refugees from Nicaragua and El Salvador during the 80s, during the civil wars there. And so I do have an understanding of the suffering that many folks are going through.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Blessings to everybody.
Thank you too.
Thank you for your call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Harry. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes. Greetings, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. My question is your program, well, back in the 1970s when I was a teenager here in Portland, we had a program called Model Cities.
Mm.
Will you be doing things like that?
I'm not familiar with it. quite honestly. If you could give me the quick 411, I could probably tell you yes or no. But
oh, okay. Well, they provided, since I was a teenager then, they provided a summer employment for teenagers.
Right.
And you using the bureaus mm-hmm. of, you know, of the city bureaus to hire the work crews for teenagers.
Right. Okay. No, that's not the Office of Equity's job. And human rights, but Sam Adams used to have quite a bit of summer employment opportunities for youth to work throughout City Hall, but I think that was cut.
Yeah, I believe it was. Although I will tell you that we have worked quite a bit with bureaus like the Parks and Recreation that hire a lot of youth in the summer. Mm-hmm. So we have worked quite a bit with them in expanding how they're doing their outreach to communities so that we can provide greater opportunities for youth of color in areas like Parks and Recreation.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'm talking to Dante James. He's the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And so it's wonderful to hear that the Human Rights Commission, and I was at the forum last night that they held, really good turnout. And I think one of the messages I shared with you earlier was that people weren't quite familiar with the Human mm-hmm. Rights Commission. Mm-hmm. wasn't quite sure who the commissioners were or what their job was. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to what's next. Mm-hmm. And it looks like we have another caller. Hello, Donna. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi, Joanne.
Hey, Donna.
This is Donna Beagle.
Hi, Donna. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you. I wanted to appreciate this Office of Equity. I'm actually on my way to Rockwood right now to do an opportunity conference for people who are struggling in the war zone of poverty. But mm-hmm. I think the more consciousness and awareness our bureaus, our city, our people, our citizens have about really creating kind of communities that work for everyone, just the better off we're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dante, do you know Donna Beagle?
If
you don't, you should.
I don't think so. You guys
should meet. So Donna Beagle is a phenomenal woman who grew up poor, got a PhD, and has spent her adult life working with people in poverty to help lift them mm. up and out of poverty, fundamentally shifting the generational focus from poverty. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so she's done some phenomenal work. So you two should connect.
I the whole conference, I'll be doing a six-hour education program today for neighbors in Rockwood that are living in poverty. And the real focus is on removing the shame, rebuilding the hope, mm-hmm. and reducing the isolation, which are cornerstones of, you know, whenever you see discrimination or a misunderstanding, usually those are some of the foundations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, Donna, you and I should certainly talk because there's now a temporary Rosewood Community Center on 162nd and Stark, and I would love to have you bringing your program out further in that neighborhood, because believe it or not, that is still the city of Portland, even though very few people know that.
Yes.
So,
mm-hmm. and most people don't know that Rockwood has the highest poverty in the state, and you know we'll have a huge population of Hispanics today, African Americans, and people in poverty who are white and Native Americans, mm-hmm. and it will be a mixture of people who come from immigrant poverty, working class poverty, that's some right. who've fallen into poverty, although they've experienced more middle class lives. And so we'll work today to really connect those folks in to a navigator who's not in poverty, who will help them navigate the city bureaus mm. and any kind of opportunities and resources they need to move out of that crisis condition of poverty. But I think that, you know, any time we put a focus on equity, we're going to be better for it. So I'm just mm-hmm. I'm listening to you guys, and I just want to call in and say congrats.
Great to hear from you, Donna, and I will connect you two via email, and you and I will connect. Good luck on your conference today.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I want to take a moment and let folks know that this evening there's a program called Voices of a People, the History of the United States. Dante and I are both performing there. So, you know, if you need some humor in your evening, it's going to be at the Curious Comedy Theater at 5225 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. It's a fundraiser for OPAL, Organizing People, Activating Leaders. And there's going to be these historic readings. I'm reading something from Sojourner Truth. What are you reading, Dante?
Frederick Douglass.
And so it's going to be a fun evening. So you guys should come and check it out and then support a worthy community organization. I didn't realize you were going to be there, too.
Yeah, I will be there, too.
All right. So have you been practicing in the mirror, Frederick Douglass?
Not in the mirror, but yeah. I've been doing my reading.
Well, very cool. Tell me what has been the biggest surprise for you, Dante, after getting settled into this job in the city of Portland? What's been your biggest surprise?
In doing the work or just in general?
No, just in general. I don't want to limit you.
Okay. Well, I could say the rain, but I won't even go there.
Oh, yeah, right. You're from Denver. Yeah, right. You're used to sun.
I am used to sun, but my staff has told me I need to stop talking about the rain so
that's
much.
That's right.
You know, it's... I guess my surprise has been, or a surprise has been, a couple things. You know, I come, as you said, I spent the last almost 30 years in Denver, and not on the West Coast. And so the large immigrant refugee population has been a surprise, not so much because it exists, because it is as organized as it is internally. And each of the communities are very organized and very engaged and really trying to be civically engaged. And I guess that did surprise me, the amount of engagement and organization that they really have, community involvement internally. And so trying to really plug that into the city. But
right.
And then, you know, I think the people, I think, well, one, you know, everybody always wants to talk about Portland being the biggest, whitest city around, which might be true if you're walking around downtown. But when you get out and about, it really looks very different. And my mission, if you will, part of the mission has been to really change that narrative, to get people to recognize that this is not the Portland of 20 years ago or 10 years or even 5 years ago, that it's, you know, almost 25% people of color in this city, and almost one in two children in public schools are kids of color.
That's right. I was going to say almost 50%.
And
right?
That's Portland now. And so the surprising thing is the number of people who don't really recognize that. And so trying to really change that narrative, I think, is an important piece.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, there was an article in the Oregonian, I believe, that talked about hiring patterns of supervisors, right? And it talked about how, people hired people basically based on who they knew, right? Which we all know subconsciously, right? You know, if you know there's a job opening, you tell your friend comes, your friend gets hired, right? Which means that we are at a place in the city of Portland where there's almost 30% of the workforce is 5 years away from retirement, right, within the next 5 years, which means that and that's a predominantly white group, right? And so the city's going to have to do a phenomenal shift, in order to even hire for those jobs, but the hiring process is going to have to be radically different. And so it was like that was one of those light bulb moments for me just a couple of weeks ago when I was reading that article. I thought, because it's not just the city of Portland. It's like any business you look at. If you look deeply at the hiring practices, what you find is that people hire people that they're comfortable with. And so part of your job is going to be to make them okay with being uncomfortable.
Okay with being uncomfortable, but also recognizing their uncomfortableness. What is it that is your unconscious bias that doesn't make it bad? It just makes it what is, and so to recognize that, and that's you're absolutely right. And I mean, about last time I looked, about 18% of the the staff, employees in the city of Portland are people of color. Mm. Women are a much bigger percentage, but about 18% are people of color. But of that, only 2% are managers or supervisors. Mm-hmm. That, for me, is a focus, because mm-hmm. That's just an unacceptable number, because it is those managers and supervisors who are making the policy and the practices and setting the climate and the tone for how their department may look.
Right.
And that is one of the huge barriers, is what's the climate and the culture.
Mm-hmm.
You can hire me, but gee, do I really want to stay here? Because
right.
This isn't for me. I can't bring my authentic self to this job.
Mm-hmm.
Be I person of color, be I gay, be I whatever, person with disability, it doesn't make any difference. And mm-hmm. So how do we change that culture? But how do we raise that consciousness that the culture is maybe a barrier itself?
Mm-hmm. We have a caller on the line. Hello, Liesl. Welcome to Cable.
Thank you. I was calling because I'm driving out of town and it's probably bad reception, but I wanted to find out if some of your training includes trauma-informed care for people working in the Bureau.
Can you define what you mean by that?
Providing care or providing services to people who've maybe experienced trauma in their life or are suffering through, difficult situations, and meeting their needs with a higher level of care than is typical to a lot of our systems?
Mm-hmm. No, honestly, at this point, no. We more often than not don't have either the expertise or the time to go to that level.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a recognition that folks have experienced trauma from the face of discrimination. Recognizing that exists, but in terms of really going into the levels of care for that, no.
Okay. Well, I would maybe just recommend that there's a really good program that focuses on trauma-informed care at PSU.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, very localized and able to assist you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate you sharing that info.
Yeah, thank you for the program.
Thank you. Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. If you've just joined us, I am speaking with Dante James. He is the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights for the City of Portland. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't want to leave the impression that the only thing we do is do training.
Right.
We provide, what I describe as technical support, or as a piece of kind of our mission is to provide education and technical support to elected and bureau directors.
Mm-hmm.
So that technical support comes in many forms, in a way trying to change what some of the things we've been talking about, be it hiring practices, et cetera. And I'll just give a couple examples of it that maybe provide a broader idea of what that is. And I use the Revenue Bureau as an example of giving taxi licenses.
Mm-hmm.
I actually testified on behalf of providing for a new taxi company mm-hmm. in this city. It was the first time in 15 years that a new taxi company had been licensed. And the city had to really change the way it looked at how it evaluated whether to provide new taxi licenses, and also evaluate how it continued to give licenses to the other companies based on how they took care of their drivers.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of taxi drivers tend to be African, many Russian speaking as well, and so those drivers were in some sense being harmed mm-hmm. by the city's inaction in ensuring that they were taken care of, in giving licenses every year to the same company mm-hmm. without asking for more specific information, and then providing a new license to an Ethiopian or Somali owned company, Union Cab now
mm-hmm.
First time in 15 years, and
cab company headquartered in East Portland
on Stark. I think I'm going to their grand opening this afternoon, actually.
Oh, very cool.
So providing that consulting was one opportunity, and the comprehensive plan is in the process of being finalized, which is essentially the city's 25-year strategic plan.
Mm-hmm.
We were very instrumental in engaging them to evaluate what they do and prepare some of the things they do with an equity lens, but giving them the ideas of how to do that. For the budgets, we provided a budget tool for each of the bureaus to use to evaluate their budgets based on an equity lens and asking some particular questions. And so a lot of equity work in some sense is about asking the right questions. It's a critical thinking exercise because I firmly believe that organizations move in the direction of the questions they ask. And so what questions are we asking ourselves to do differently?
Well, it's wonderful that I know Sam Adams started this process about asking those kind of questions as related to developing the budget. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to see that that process is continuing on. I also want to ask you about whether I want to acknowledge the fact that you are now in the mayor's portfolio, which matters.
I think it does. I mean, right. Last year, the first year, we were in the portfolio of Commissioner Fritz, and I absolutely respect and appreciate her hard work, the fights that she had to fight, the support that she provided me personally and provided the office. I can't say enough about her in that regard. This year, the mayor decided to keep the office, and I think that, raises in some sense the level of I don't know what the right word is.
Visibility,
the gravitas.
Expectations.
Expectations, certainly. But it certainly raises it in the eyes of, I think, the community and our ability to have a broader voice and a broader ability to impact the bureaus across the board.
Well, and I think to the mayor's credit, Charlie Hales, I do know your name, Charlie Hales, honest. To Charlie Hales' credit, the fact that he listened to the community who's been saying these issues are important and kept it says that he's actually has his ears open and he's listening to that kind of feedback. If you'd like to join Dante and I in this conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. I'd like to tell you what's coming up today on KBOO at 9, hear Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on A Deeper Look, host Linda Olson Oster Lund speaks with attorney Stephen Downs about the case of a Muslim man who was targeted by an FBI sting and convicted. But now documents indicate it was a case of mistaken identity. At 10, hear Eric Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoint, writer and activist Kevin Gray discusses the Supreme Court decision to cut a key aspect of the landmark 1965 Voting Rights Act. He also weighs in on George Zimmerman's trial for the murder of teen Trayvon Martin. I want to thank KBOO members for your generous support. And if you're not a member, you can go online at kboo.fm and click on the tip jar. It's that simple. So, Dante, one of the questions I did have was, in light of the Supreme Court's decision, I know that, we live in Oregon and we're a vote-by-mail state, and the Voting Rights Act doesn't impact us directly, but it's got to have an impact on the work of an organization that's about equity and human rights.
Well, I mean, I think it does impact the state when it comes to redistricting and other things of that nature. Again, I've only been in Oregon for a year, so I don't know historically what's going well. I mean, I know historically, as it's related to a number of other things and people of color, and this was at one point considered the most racist state outside the Deep South.
Yes.
I get that. Right. But, I think it's very disappointing, the decision regarding the Voting Rights Act, because it essentially said, and I haven't read the entire decision, I read Justice Ginsburg's dissent, but because the Voting Rights Act has worked, we don't need it anymore.
That's
the bottom line.
Right.
And so, there were specific instances of where the VRA was used to inhibit discriminatory acts on the part of states.
Right.
And then that's held against it and said, well, see, we don't need it anymore.
Right.
It just doesn't ring true.
Well, and the other thing is that even in the last election cycle. I mean, every election cycle, we hear the egregious stories about voter intimidation, right. Voter suppression, mm-hmm. Passing laws to make it harder and harder and harder to vote. Mm-hmm. And so it does feel a bit like we're in like the twilight zone mm-hmm. almost, because on one hand, we're celebrating the ability of gay and lesbian people to right. marry, which is huge. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think I'd live to see that. I didn't think right. I'd live to see a black president, right. gay people getting married, mm-hmm. and the Voting Rights Act being dismantled, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so I do think that we're in this time where if we're not careful, we won't have any rights left to protect. And mm-hmm. so
I think... Wow. I mean, it's been a week of Supreme Court decisions. No yes. question about it.
And now they're on vacation.
Yeah, that's how they work. The removal of DOMA is a wonderful final decision, if you will.
Right.
In some sense, they punted because it did not. They left it to the rest of
the
states to do
what
they do. They didn't answer the question 50 statewide.
That's right.
They gave it back, you know, and said California no, but the rest of you do what you do.
Right.
As opposed to creating a 50 state answer. So
I'm not going to ask you to figure out this Supreme Court, but I am going to ask you what's your aspirations for the next couple of years as you see your work rolling out and really having an impact on the city bureaus? What do you see happening mm-hmm. in the next couple of years?
Well, you know, I would love to work myself out of a job, mm-hmm. quite honestly, that in the same way, you know, sustainability and recycling was unheard of and or people were confused about it, didn't want to do it because it was a pain, et cetera. And now it's just the normal course of business. Mm-hmm. That's how I would like to see equity. Mm-hmm. That equity is what is considered every time you're doing a new policy practice, you're doing outreach, you're doing community engagement, you're doing whatever you do, that equity is a part of that. And that is the long-term goal. Mm-hmm. How we can get there is piece by piece at this point. But that would be my long-term goal, is just institutionalizing this so it's no longer an add-on, mm-hmm. but it's apart from the beginning through the end.
Well, and I think that may be one of the concerns publicly, right? Because since volunteering to be part of the creation committee that actually created the Office of Equity and Human Rights, mm-hmm. Lots of governments have announced these equity programs, right?
Right.
And just like the term sustainability, it only works if you have a clear idea of what sustainability looks like, right?
Right.
With equity, all of a sudden, everybody has equity policies and they're developing right. equity plans.
Right.
And so you would think that we're moving towards a much more racially just society,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? But it doesn't ring true.
Well, it's not that easy.
On the street.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I always say that everybody says they want to do equity until I describe to them what it means. And then the pushback starts because
right.
it's going to take me a little more time. They're going to assume it's going to cost more money. All the reasons that you typically hear. And so those are not inhibitors to doing equity. They're mm-hmm. really not. And you're right. Equity is the buzzword of the day. And I tell folks I'm just a new flavor. And so, but how do we really infuse equity all the way through?
Mm-hmm.
So one, people understand what it is, and two, recognize that it is important, mm-hmm. that it's a business imperative, if nothing else, mm-hmm. right? We're going to do better work. We're going to get better people coming to the city to do work mm-hmm. because the city is open that way, and it provides equity and equality across mm-hmm. the board, and it's seen and it's felt.
I know one thing I wanted to mention to you. You said one of your surprises was that immigrant communities were so well organized.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to let you, I want to give credit to a previous mayor, Tom Potter, mm-hmm. who actually gave grants, was for the first time the city of Portland gave grants to very small community-based organizations that work specifically with communities that did not have a voice at City Hall, right? And so he paved the way mm-hmm. for those groups to be able to organize their own communities, mm-hmm. to be able to have dialogues, and then to be able to develop the skills to mm-hmm. actually start advocating for the stuff that they cared right. about. Right. And so without that leadership, mm-hmm. that would not have happened.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely understand. It's because our New Portlander program was kind of recreated, but was begun under Mayor Potter.
Yes,
so absolutely,
yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I you know, how wonderful to live in, I guess, to have lived here long enough to be able to connect the dots, mm-hmm. right? Because people think, oh, that this just dropped out of the sky.
Right,
well,
right.
you know, no
this has taken a long time mm-hmm. to get where it is.
And that's why I feel so old some days. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Bob. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne, and I didn't catch the other gentleman's name, but thanks for the show.
You're welcome, Dante.
Dante James.
Thank you. I had planned on going to the open house today, and I have the address but for the cab driver folks, but just in case I don't make it, what can I do to support them in case I don't get to go today?
If you ever take a cab, take them.
Yeah, that would be my answer.
I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks for the show.
You're welcome. Right, have a great one. And I have to tell you, I have had such a pleasant experience with the cab drivers, because when you talk to the cab drivers about, well, how does it feel now to be an owner?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh, I get into the longest, most in-depth conversations,
right.
and they are so grateful mm-hmm. that they have the opportunity to actually be building a business
right.
that's going to support them and their families and the next generation.
Right.
Yeah. So there was a listener that called that wanted to know if your department supports the Occupy movement.
I mean, we haven't officially done anything with the Occupy movement, certainly, but yes. I mean, I think the goals... I guess I can't say. I don't know specifically how they describe their goals, but mm-hmm. but the idea of raising awareness of the disparity that exists in terms of income inequality, I think is certainly something that we support. You know, the other issues of, you know, where you are and where they're sleeping, et cetera, we haven't gotten into. But mm-hmm. If the city or when the city moves toward addressing, you know, sidewalk issues and those kinds of things, I would imagine that equity has to be a part of that conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Also, I want to ensure people understand that the office is focused on race and ethnicity, but also on disability.
Mm-hmm.
And we also oversee the Portland Commission on Disability, and it's an extremely active and highly functioning committee commission in terms of the work that it does in the city, raising awareness about disability issues, working on the Title II transition plan and understanding what barriers exist in buildings and in programs around the city. The city is now a model employer of people with disabilities, so mm-hmm. really trying to get a better sense of how it does its hiring of people with disability. And also now all video that goes up on the web that are city videos must be captioned now.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of great work going on around issues of disability as well.
Excellent, excellent. We're going to go back to the phone line. Haben, welcome to KBOO.
Hello.
Hi.
I sort of missed a comment just a little while ago. You were saying something about some policies or something else, and this talking with Dante.
Yes.
And you, Dante, you made some sort of comment, and I couldn't figure out what it was in relation to, but it was simply this statement. I'm kind of sensitive to the way we talk about things, and you said something about bringing a good quality of people to the city about something. I couldn't follow what the comment was about, but it just struck me.
Mm-hmm.
And, this idea that there aren't already, that the people that are in whatever the situation was you were making the statement about, there was some view there that we needed to bring more good people to the city, and I just wanted to stop and just say, hey guys, careful how we say things, because if there's somebody that we think maybe you could qualify as the opposite of whatever it was you were looking for. Maybe they need the same kind of structure and support and whatever. So that's my only comment in the way that we express ourselves.
Okay, no, I appreciate that. I guess I didn't recognize my statement that way, and that's certainly not what I meant. There are obviously qualified, well-qualified people here living in the city doing great work, and I guess my meaning was that we can bring a greater awareness and desire to come to this city because it is a city considered to be an equitable city. That's all I meant.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Back to the phone line. Hello, Brian. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Dante, welcome to Portland.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, and so hopefully as our progressive city, you'll make it even better.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a couple questions. Have you had if you had a chance to look at the sit-and-lie laws, and let me ask you the second one, and I'll take my answer off the air. Have you had the privilege of meeting our Nazi police trainer and the rest of our offending police squad? Because, you know, I think that, you know, dude, I mean, it may be, I don't know if it's outside your spectrum there, but, you know, I think that would fall into, you know, a concern of an official office. I really would like you to go down there and just shake hands with them and, you know, see where they're at.
I think he just got promoted.
Office, but,
I think he just got promoted, isn't he? Didn't he move to East Portland, East
I
Precinct?
I don't know. I have trouble keeping.
I try hard to keep track of him.
They're always full of surprises.
Thank you so much for your questions.
And you guys have a great day.
Thank you,
Brian. The same.
Thank you, Brian. In answer to the first question regarding sit-and-lie law specifically, no, I have not. Mm-hmm. In terms of police training, I have not met the person you're referring to. I have met a large number of the command staff of the police bureau. I've also spent some time at the training facility where they do their scenario-based training and had conversations with Captain Parman, who is the head of the training facility out there, about their training scenarios. And so I have had a good bit of interaction with the police. I sit on a committee that's kind of working on the DOJ settlement and how it will be implemented with the community engagement. So it is a part of what my office does, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure I saw Mr. Kroger on a list of recent promotions that came out of Chief Reese's office. Mm. But, hey, I try to keep track of him because I don't want him patrolling in my neighborhood. 503-231-8187. We've got a few minutes left. So if you've got a burning question for Dante James, it's either now or a year from now when we invite him back.
We'll do it again, right? Right. Hopefully it won't be that long.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be that long. So is there anything that's coming up with the Office of Equity and Human Rights that we should be sharing with the public? Any heads up about stuff coming down the path? One of the things that I want to appreciate is both the new chair of the Human Rights Commission and Amy Samora, who's been on the commission for a couple of years, but has really been one of the people I see out in the community at a whole host of events. Mm-hmm. And I want to compliment the fact that I can now say, oh, there's a human rights commissioner at this meeting, right? Which is unique for us here. Mm-hmm. And so I wish them well in what they're doing. How can the community help you be successful?
Well, several ways, I think. One, it's always good to hear from the community, support and or critical thoughts on how we do what we do. I would suggest that the mayor's office would be probably always a good avenue to let the mayor know that the community is watching and concerned about equity in the city and how it is being implemented. Mm-hmm. And supporting the Human Rights Commission, I mean, it meets once a month regularly, and those meetings are open to the public. And so I would think that the opportunity to engage with the Human Rights Commission would be another avenue to approach. Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a good list. Yeah. Sounds like a real, and just kind of just pay attention. If there are issues that I think, especially if you see violations of people's human rights, you may want to take that to the Human Rights Commission. We have the IPR for right. other kind of complaints like that.
Right.
And it looks like we have another caller on the line. Hello, Tony. Welcome to KBOOT.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I joined in late, so someone may have already done this.
Okay.
But my concern is the Portland Development Commission and the gentrification of many parts of the city, which in effect are racist. I don't think they're intended to be racist, but the results are racist with, you know, this almost a migration out to East County and Gresham.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious how that all fits into what you're doing, what your office is doing.
It does fit in, actually.
Good question. Thanks for the
call. And to your point, equity doesn't look at intentions. It looks at outcomes.
Oh, good.
And so that's where we have to start, because if the outcome is not what we want, we then have to work ourselves backwards in determining what are the barriers that maintain that status quo. And so there have been very recently, as I think I mentioned, the comprehensive plan is being done. And so it's also being done with an equity view to understand where the next wave of gentrification could happen. A study was just completed. I think Dr. Lisa Bates from PSU was very instrumental in completing a study that essentially looked at mapping where the possible issues of gentrification could come up, be it Cully, be it other neighborhoods that are on the cusp of the current residents being pushed out.
And a follow-up question to that would be, do you work with Metro and Gresham and Hillsborough and all those? Because they're having to deal with a lot of the issues that inner city Portland used to have to deal with.
Yeah. Some the cities that you mentioned, no. I think I work more with the county. Multnomah County has an office very similar to this. So some of the other folks doing this work I do, but the other specific municipalities that you mentioned, we have not really engaged that much yet.
But the caller raises a good point. Since the city council actually approves the PDC budget, the city council has some control over what PDC does or doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might make sense to have this kind of conversation with the Portland Development Commissioners themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe to have a training with them.
Right.
Because I think the more the leadership understands equity, because I was actually surprised when I saw gentrification happen in Portland the way it happened, because we pat ourselves on the back about how progressive we are and how forward-thinking we are.
Right.
And so it was shocking to watch it, and I could see that it was going to happen. I mean, you could see the speculators starting to come.
Mm-hmm.
Northeast Portland is just radically different than it was before,
right.
And it's certainly not a community that reflects any kind of African American culture at all.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
so that's what we have, and I see that that's happening in East County as well. So thank you so much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate it. And the other thing I wanted to say about the impact of gentrification is on policing services, because when the police start saying this is the gang activity, when I first moved to Portland, inner Northeast was what the police said was the gang activity area. Today, 30 years later, they say that 162nd and Stark is gang central, right? And their descriptions are exactly the same 30 years apart,
right?
And they're talking about the exact same community, right? That's actually been displaced from one place to the other. And the reaction is exactly the same. You get a lot of police services, but nothing else until we gentrify. And then once we gentrify, we have a lot of public dollars that we can invest then to make it all pretty for the new people moving in, right? And so I mean, there's no quick answer to that, but it's certainly the pieces don't connect. So PDC is out there looking for businesses and making investments, and if they're not connected to the issue of gentrification, then there's a disconnect.
Oh, very true. And so it's a conversation that I think is being had and needs to continue to be had.
Yes,
certainly with PDC as as a helper in terms of development of how the city looks and where it moves its work and dollars.
And I just want to thank you, Dante James. It's been my pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you, Joanne, very much.
Won't wait a whole year to bring you back.
Good.
We'll talk soon. And if you would like to more information, Dante's website is on KBOO's website as well as my Facebook page. See you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a fabulous day. Bye. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold.
And good morning, just a minute before 9 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Busy Thursday morning lineup for you in about a half hour on A Deeper Look. Host Linda Olson Osterlund speaks with attorney Stephen Downs of Project Salaam about the case of a Muslim man who was targeted by an FBI sting and convicted, but now documents indicate it was a case of mistaken identity. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, writer and activist Kevin Gray discusses the Supreme Court decision to cut a key aspect of the landmark 1965 Voting Rights Act. He also weighs in on the George Zimmerman trial for the murder of teen Trayvon Martin. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews No Violet Bulawayo about her new novel of Africa called We Need New Names. And at 11:30, the film show features news and interviews about the independent film scene in Portland. But first, it's Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell, and that is next on KBOO.
Good in the Hood returns to celebrate its 20th year, June 20th through the 30th. Good in the Hood is a multicultural music and food festival featuring a parade, information village, kids space, arts and crafts, and an ethnic marketplace. Saturday, June 29th, Good in the Hood will be at Lillis Albina Park in North Portland with music, and KBOO will broadcast live from the park from 2 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the